Hey guys, I've been trialing some revolutionary new swim tech, and now you can get your hands on it too. This is EO Swim Better, a swimming evolution in the palm of your hands. Improve your technique with EO Swim Better.
Analyze your stroke technique with EO's Swim Better handset. Go to eolab.com, use code Brett at checkout and save 10%. We individualize training in the pool, so why not individualize your nutrition? Erica Biney of Biney Wellness Building will help you and your swimmers get exactly what each athlete needs through genetic testing and personalized nutrition plans. So stop guessing what you should and shouldn't be putting into your body. Athletes within a few weeks have noticed they're recovering faster because they're fueling their body with what they need and staying away from what their body hates. Erica understands swimming. She gets it. She's worked with over 20 Olympians, including the fastest man in the world, Caleb Dressel. Group discounts are available, so go to Biney Wellness Building and get in touch with Erica today. That's Biney, B-E-I-N-E, wellnessbuilding.net. All right, cool. Here with Laura Quilter today. How you doing, Laura?
Yeah, very good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, where are you coming from?
Auckland, all the way down in New Zealand.
Auckland, New Zealand. I actually lived in Auckland, New Zealand. I lived in Pakuranga for 1 year.
No way. That's awesome.
You know where that is?
Yeah, I'm actually not that familiar with over the bridge. I've kind of moved to the North Shore, but it's definitely aware of where it is.
Over the bridge girl, hey?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. No, it was cool. It was a good experience when I was younger. Loved it. Loved playing rugby barefoot. That was cool.
Yeah, those cold mornings, like watch the kiddies on the like frostbitten grass. Mm. It's pretty gnarly.
Yeah. Well, listen, I got introduced to you a couple of weeks ago. Someone sent me some stuff from you and just kind of your experiences that you've had as a swimmer lately. I saw it on Instagram and just was blown away with some of the things you were talking about, some of the results you've had. So I thought we'd just share some of that today. So kind of give us a little bit of background on you.
Yeah, so I suppose this whole, I've kind of approached my recent venture back into swimming as an experiment. So like in 2023, I went to my first Masters Nationals, and the only motivation for that is there was a new pool built in the Hawke's Bay, and I was a bit jealous I never swam in it. So to cut a long story short, we sat in the car for like 7 hours before the 53, getting down to Hawke's Bay, and I swam not too far off my best. And that was off the back of like one training session a week with a triathlon squad. So, you know, swimming like, I don't know, moderate pace for 3K. And that kind of sparked this intrigue, being like, how can I still be swimming relatively quickly given like almost no volume, right? So then I decided to test my own theories and jump back in the pool in like September 23 with the goal of setting a lifetime best in the 50 freestyle. And it kind of happened in 8 weeks, which like I was not expecting. Wow. And then it's now April 24 and I swam 100% lifetime best in the 50 free back and butterfly at the New Zealand Nationals.
Wow. Wow. Well, just in terms of the level that you're at beforehand, so what are we comparing to? Where were you before? What was your career lifetime best, and what stage did you stop swimming?
So I was your classic lifetime swimmer, you know, learned as a baby and kept going. I had a few national titles in New Zealand, and then internationally I raced at the 2014 Commonwealth Games as part of the women's 4x1. I also dabbled a lot in the surf lifesaving, so I competed in the pool there at the World Champs in 2012, 2014 and 2016, and had a bit of success there. At one point held a world record for this like 50 sprint event where you drag this like mannequin down the pool.
Yes,
that was so fun.
I love that. So your best times in the events that you got best times in recently, what were they beforehand?
Back in 2016, I had a 25.80 lifetime best in the 53. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I think I won nationals that year in that time. So yeah, 25.8. I will caveat it though, 2016 I was training for the 50, 100 and 200. So it wasn't super sprint specific, but you know, I was definitely still targeting that 50.
And why were you swimming for all three events at that stage?
The 200 was a quick change. So we, and my coach and I kind of made the decision, I think it was nine months out of the trials, that that was the more likely split for the Olympic qualification. In hindsight, I actually wasn't that close anyway. So I had previously been a 100 freestyler, but the time was a lot more challenging than the 200 qualification standard. So that was kind of the rationale. So I jumped quite rapidly in that last season up to doing a little bit more base work. And it really showed. Like, I think I went through 150 pretty good. And I tell you what, I just blew to pieces in that last 50. So probably...
100 swimmer trying to swim up to a 200, yeah, that'll get you. So at that stage, what type of training were you doing for the majority of your career, you would say? Because I saw this comparison on Instagram where you're saying, I used to do this and now I do this and this is how fast I am. So in terms of what you were doing back then, how would you categorize it? How many workouts a week, what type of yardage, what were you aiming for?
Yeah, the contrast is actually wild. So like in 2016, I was your classic like club swimmer. So in the water, 8 times a week, 2 hours, and that's swimming anywhere from, you know, start of season, 8 kilometers through to the pointy end, swimming 4 to 5. And then at 31, I was like, you know, time poor as well, getting really specific. So 2016, 8 sessions a week. And in 2024, I was swimming, honestly, like 3 times a week. But I really focused a lot on the gym. And what I think I did differently in 2024 is like every stroke I took, as much as I could, I was focusing on technique and not wasting any time, because I'm working in another thing. So I found the motivation of only having very limited time helped me really focus on the quality of every session. Because in 2016, there were times, you know, I'd look at my goggles and I'd pick the like tinted ones so that if I cried in the training session, I thought the coach wouldn't notice. Like they always do, you know, you're sitting there and they're telling you the set and your goggles are still on. Yeah. But you know what really shocked me is even though I was only training 3 times a week, I was so fatigued because the intensity was so high. And I still remember talking to the coach from the club I joined at Coast, and he's been fantastic in bouncing ideas off, but he said, you know, people often think that volume and intensity are really different, but he basically said they're almost, you know, different sides of the same coin. So even though my volume in meters was less, my fatigue was still, you know, creeping up there. And that was something I had to get used to, because in the back of my mind, I was still like, do I need to be doing these 5K sessions? Do I need a base? But if I'm swimming 25 seconds, there's no point.
No, I agree. It's interesting that we talk to people like us and base, the word base seems to just be stuck in our heads for some reason. And it's like, well, what is base, you know, and how has it got into our heads so deeply that everybody thinks that base is something that is absolutely necessary, or even, I don't even know how to define, what is base anyway?
In my mind, base is this, I suppose, like endurance capacity, like an aerobic fitness, like your VO2 max, but then there's no point in focusing on that if it's not specific to your event. And I think one of the most amazing people in this whole journey for me is actually my partner, who's a physio, and he's treated a few of the national swim teams for New Zealand, which has been fantastic for my own learning as well. But he was kind of shocked from a completely outsider's perspective, you know, looking in, understanding physiology and training principles, and then hearing what, you know, a 100 breaststroker is maybe swimming like 8Ks or something. He was a bit like, I don't understand the, I suppose, the physiology or the training methodology behind that. And I found myself trying to defend this like old school way of thinking and almost like unpicking years of just consuming this idea of base and not really critically looking at it. So that was actually, that was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, look, even what you talked about there with the way that you felt, you know, the two sides of the coin in terms of the volume and intensity, why can't base be based on the manipulation of volume and intensity? You know, why can't you build a base of speed? And this is what I talk about with people all the time. When we think of base, we think of volume, and we think of it being at an aerobic kind of pace of like you're just building up a volume of work. Why can't you build up a volume of intensity? like what you're talking about, why can't that be the base? Why can't the base be based around speed and speed endurance? And I pump this out all the time. It's like, why can't you go fast in the beginning of the season? Why do you have to go really slow for an extended period of time? Like you said, you were doing 8K a workout. You know, why can't you do half of that, but the intensity's much greater, you know? So this to me is like, there's different ways we can build base. It doesn't have to just be the one way. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. And part of my, I suppose, like, wanting to approach my training differently, I actually reached out to one of the guys that was on my coaching team for Surf Life Saving, and he coached the beach sprinters, but he also has a whole bunch of, you know, track and field sprinters. And I wanted to know what their week of training looked like. And I was quite surprised. I think he said his top females were actually only at the track. I think it was like 4 times a week, but you know, the amount of training, they were also in the gym, they were doing their recovery sessions as well. But he said that those track sessions were at maximal intensity. And I think that's the challenging thing, is what I found. If I was trying to do too much, I couldn't hold my technique. And that was where I was battling in my head, being like, if I can't hold a sprint technique, do I just do a bunch of 200s? You know, like, where am I going with the specificity and maintaining technique alongside speed?
Right, right. Couple of questions came from that. I was thinking there, what is sprint technique to you? How do you swim with speed, as opposed to if you were just, like you were saying, if you were switching that off and doing 200, 400 pace, what would be the differences?
That's something that I have tried really hard to learn about. So, I mean, I got so excited. I've just re-fallen in love with swimming, right? Like, I've listened to a lot of your podcasts. I've read research, and I've even, you know, watched a lot of the Olympians' social media, the way that they swim underwater. And so I think the biggest change for me was learning that kind of to anchor my hips was quite a new concept for me. So I've always been, I suppose, quite a rotational, hip-driven style of freestyle. I'm also very long, so I felt quite powerful with this full movement, but trying to learn to engage that transverse abdominis, not like that deep core, to anchor the hips and then just high velocity at the shoulders, that was probably the biggest difference. So if I go in some 200 cruise pace, I've probably got a little bit more lateral side-to-side movement at the hips. If I'm sprinting, I'm trying to think about lifting the hips and that controlled aggression from the shoulders, and also still having that catch. I like to call it prep position, like, because you're preparing for propulsion, but you're still got that, but it is a straighter pull under the water. So trying to get stronger through the shoulder to be able to pull with a straighter arm. So there wasn't as much flexion at my elbow than there would be at the distance as well.
Love that explanation. Really good job there. Congrats. That was awesome. I love it. You did a better job than I could ever do, that's for sure. Why do you think that kind of a straighter arm underwater now and creating propulsion, why is that a thing these days? It used to always be about kind of sliding the arm in, anchoring, getting that high elbow. It was always about, you need a high elbow. Everyone was this. Now we're kind of like catching early and pressing down, holding on to water. Why do you think that's more effective?
Guaranteed there's going to be some person that picks this apart. But the theory that I had is that you like offset the drag because of the speed, right? If you're only swimming short and the arm is straighter, you've technically got more like frontal drag, but you get more lift of the front body. So you've got like this absolute motor out the back. You're pressing faster to get lift, and also the longer the lever, the more like power you can generate, right? So if you're strong enough to maintain that with good technique, in my head, I get lift with the body and then power through the stroke cycle. So that's my kind of theory.
Another brilliant explanation. I've got to take you on tour with me. You got to explain this to people. That's really good. Because I talk about this, you know, relationship between propulsion and drag all the time. You know, the faster we go, the more drag we're going to create, but the more surface area we have as well, you know. So I think the straight arm itself is creating a lot more surface area holding on, and if you've got good technique with that. Now, do you drive, when you catch, are you driving your fingers down towards the bottom of the pool and holding your arm in close to the body?
I liked that. It didn't make sense to me until I was chatting with my friend who did like biomechanics, but I almost try and do that whole concept of anchoring the arm into the water. So I'm basically feeling for density and then trying to get the body past it. So I used to really think about pulling my water back. Right. And I have changed that a little bit to, you know, as fast as I can, finding that density and then just allowing the body to go past that point.
All right. I like that.
But my coach back in, I had an amazing coach in 2016 and he brought that concept up to me, but it never made sense until I've actually been watching athletes underwater and actually seen that concept of anchoring the hand, you know, and then rather than pulling it through.
Yeah,
I don't know if that answers the question.
No, it does. It's fascinating. It's really good. And I guess this gets people to think a lot. I also love the fact where you talk about lift, you know, lifting in the water. I see so many people make the mistake in sprinting of trying to barge, trying to push themselves, you know, through the water instead of sitting as high as they can, you know, and this is where I've learned so much from, you know, Cam McAvoy and, you know, some other people that, you know, Flo Manadu that are big bodied people that are sitting up high in the water, Ben Proud, getting up high in the water, getting over the top of the water, kind of hydroplaning more. Have you felt that effect as well?
Yes, when I've got like fins on, maybe like every now and again in a magic session without, but I have to almost use tools to get there. And I like that you brought up Cam because the shots of him underwater, it's like art. He can manipulate his body where the hips are high, but it looks like, you know, he's almost on that angle, like he does look like a speedboat kind of going through. It's pretty amazing to watch. But then do you know what did fascinate me at the World Champs is and I'm gonna have a mind blank now, the man that won gold who came from
Vukov.
Yeah, he's got quite a horizontal line in the body, and you know, I think you interviewed him and he's actually looking forward in that 50. And I think that's the beauty of swimming, is you can have still such a range of technique, and I think that relates definitely to the body types and things, but I thought he was an interesting sprint swimmer in the way that his body was in the water.
Yeah, I think it does come down to body types for sure. You know, the similarity with all of these great athletes, you know, Sarah Sostrom, anybody that we're going to mention here who can swim really fast, is they have that hammer at the back, that just that engine that is going. Have you always had that, even when you were swimming a little bit slower than you are now?
I think the kick was always relatively strong. It actually got a lot better when I was focusing more on surf life saving, because if you don't have a strong kick, that mannequin will tell you straight away. It's like quite heavy. Mm. The bum drops and it's like you feel like the Titanic. So I think I've had an okay kick. I think there was so much room for improvement in my stroke and in the cadence of my kick. So I think in the gym, one of the most stark differences was using that like really fast twitch movements. And I was always lifting heavy back 8 years ago, but I've introduced more of that plyo and the, have you heard of tantrums? You know, in the gym where you put your legs up on the Bosu ball and you're basically kicking lying on your back.
Oh, yeah.
That exercise amazed me because I could only physically do it for like 10 seconds before my legs just like stopped. And I thought, you know, that was a really good way of improving that neuromuscular speed.
Yeah.
But I think also at the end of this whole little experiment, it's also given me an incredible appreciation for the men and the women at the top of their game. Because, you know, I swam a 25.3150 freestyle. And there's women swimming 23 seconds. You know, like it genuinely just gave me this incredible awe of what these people are capable of.
Yeah. Yeah. The top end of the sport is freaky, isn't it? They're so good. In terms of what I saw on Instagram too, is that it wasn't just about the pool, like of doing less, right? I think that's where people get lost a lot, is that you had this list of comparisons of things that had changed or improved. Can you take us down the list of things that you were comparing on Instagram?
Yeah, I might quickly bring it up because I've actually forgotten what it was.
Yeah, it was really good. I liked the list.
There we go. Yeah, so swim training frequency. So 2016, 8 times, 2024, 3 times. And that was 2 hours versus one. And you're right, the biggest difference, yes, it was less frequent and less time, but I was swimming at maximal intensities almost every session. But the reason I could do that is because I wasn't swimming as often. There is no way that I could have swum 8 times a week at an 8 to 9 out of 10 intensity. So you're right. I do think it's important that, especially like all these young athletes thinking that just seeing one thing on Instagram and not considering what it looks like in context. Like it was a very well-considered program. Right. You know, like, so that was the frequency, the distance. So 5 to 8 Ks versus 2 to 3. Again, like, and this was my coach from Coast. He said, if we're aiming for around 400 to 600 meters of maximal intensity sessions, that's a pretty good ballpark. And I really enjoyed that because I was playing around with those distances. And I tell you what, there's no way I could get to like 600 meters of maximal intensity because my technique was falling apart.
It gets real hard, doesn't it? You get up to 400, you think, 400 of fast swimming, not that difficult. You get to 400, you're like, I'm done, I'm toast. So like to get to six, I get that question all the time. How much do you do? Yeah, I think within that range of that 400 to 800, if you can get that range in there of real high intensity, 800 is the top of the spectrum too. But somewhere around that 400 to 600, I think is kind of the sweet spot, isn't it?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think this one was actually quite interesting. So I did do a comparison between the equipment that I used. So in 2016, I was primarily, it was a kickboard, pool boy, and a band. And then this year it's been snorkel, chute, and fin. So I almost have given away my kickboard. And it's more, so in my head, when I was like kicking with the board, I felt like it was putting a tiny bit of extra pressure through my shoulders and changing the body position. So I've done a lot more of the penguin-based kicking, you know, the arms by the side, working on, I found that very valuable because I could really focus on my lower abdominals and that rotation. So I was trying to imagine almost separating my thoracic from my hips so I could move the upper back while keeping the hips stable. So I very rarely use a kickboard anymore for short 25s and things to work on the speed of the kick, the cadence. I would use a board, but I use a lot more body position kicking than I used to back in 8 years ago.
Wow, that's awesome. And the fact that you said, you know, two of the biggest items you used to use were kind of a pool boy and a band, where you're basically just cutting off your legs, and now you've done away with those and you're utilizing your legs every time you swim fast.
Yeah, well, what has been funny with the band is I hated it back in, like, because I was awful, like, with a band back in 2016. But I did use it kind of near the end going into trials, because what I found with the band is I could focus on that like hip shoulder connection. So as you know, the right hand's entering, trying to like imagine that line of strength from the left hip through to the right shoulder. And if I did a couple of those 25s with relative, you know, high power and then took it off and did a couple of sprints, I felt like my trunk connection was quite good. I don't know if it actually worked, but in my head it felt awesome.
It makes perfect sense. Yeah, absolutely. And I love the fact that you're talking about that hip to shoulder opposite connection there. That's so key, I think, in terms of catching and swimming really fast, for sure. Yeah, what else?
And so I think there was gym training, so that was really different. So I love the gym, and it was I worked intermittently with a coach who was incredibly knowledgeable, and he taught me a lot about the way the body moves and integrating. One of my favorites in the gym was actually the bent over cable, and so he had me doing relatively short range like bent over lat pull downs, but just keeping the lat engaged the whole time and trying to keep that slight, you know, high elbow. And I found if I do that movement in the gym and then I swam later that day, I could just like get onto my like catch or that prep position really quick. And that was really, really useful. And it was, again, not long sessions with the PT compared to what I'd do if I was just meandering through my own gym session. But it really made me more aware of the way that my body moves and how to activate different muscles.
And
as I mentioned before, a lot more of that power plyo. So 4 times a week gym, including a spin class, and then 8 years ago, it was probably two times a week, three at most.
Love it. I love it. In terms of the spin, you just said spin there. Why did you add the spin in, and what effect did you feel like that gave you?
So it was a 30-minute max effort, like, you know, the step bike class, and it gave me a bit of that speed endurance. So, like, I know that my cadence had to come up. And right. This particular class, it's, you know, really high intensity. And I figured that it would kind of give me an ability to get my hip flexors moving in that plane, you know, up and down. I mean, I know it's a big leg and it's not the same, but it was more for that high intensity heart rate stuff that sometimes I found it hard. If I'm being completely honest, I found it hard to motivate by myself when I was training to, say, do the 10-50s max. And I figured if I was doing a 30-minute of spin, maximum intensity, my heart, I was like flatlining for 30 minutes, like heart rate 170 to 180. That was, I suppose, a supplementary way of really challenging my cardiovascular system, as well as trying to improve that the speed of my hip movement.
I love this. You know, this is where I feel like some people lose it with sprinting, is they cut this part out. They feel like they don't need this speed endurance. And I think the speed endurance is crucial to swimming fast. I do believe in a foundation. I also believe in the fact that, you know, within that foundation, you need times where you touch efforts like that, where it shocks the body. It does hurt the body and it shocks the body. I don't think that just swimming, you know, 5 seconds, 6 seconds speed work and cutting off and doing repeats of short distances, I don't think in the long run that gets you to the end of the race the way you want to get there. So I do agree with a lot of coaches that talk about being able to finish races and back up races, you know, from heat, semis and finals. And this is where I think something like this speed endurance type work pays it off massively. And so I'm really glad you incorporated that.
Yeah. And I think that's awesome you've just said that, because I do get worried that people assume that the revolution is all about just getting it shorter and that, you know, but at the end of the day, you need to be able to hold it together, like you said.
Yeah, for sure. And look, none of us do love going in there necessarily and doing the 10-50s all out, you know, max speed. I mean, there's a time and a place for it, but it gets hard to do on your own. So sometimes we just skip the hard stuff, you know. But I really love the fact. And then look, the legs are the biggest muscle group in the body too. I feel like they take up the most energy and oxygen. And like you said, the cadence that you have to get to. I mean, this is where Bukov won the world title in his legs. His legs were just like, man, you know, hammering. And I'm like, that's a man with either crazy genetically fit legs, or he's working his legs all the time. So it's probably a combination of the two. But yeah, you definitely need it. You know, you can't finish that race. I think you get to the 35, you lose your legs, you lose your whole body. So, you know, you got to get to the 35 and your legs have to kick in that extra gear, don't they?
Yeah, and what I really liked from my gym coach, he actually, when we're in the gym, he doesn't know, you know, the specifics of swimming, that's not a specialty, but he knows that the race was going to take 25 seconds. So when we're in the gym, we were working maximal intensity movements to 30 or 35 seconds, because he said you don't want to get to 25 and that to be your maximal output. You want to be, you know, almost imagine that Usain Bolt, the way he runs through the finish line. Obviously, we're not going to swim through a wall, but he said you need to be having that extra bit in the bank so that when you hit the wall, you're still at maximal speed, you're not decelerating. And I quite liked that.
I love that. Love that. Very smart. Very, very smart. So walk me through the week then. So, like, how would it look? When would you do things exactly? Because I think that matters too. Like, when is the gym as opposed to when is the swim? When do you go fast as opposed to when do you recover? All that. So take me through kind of just a general week of what it would look like.
So that got really complicated because I'm a shift worker. So I work as a nurse. So, like, often, you know, I'll have a run of working till midnight or 2 a.m. and then a run of morning. So as a general rule, I tried to aim for roughly Monday, Wednesday, Friday swims. Mm-hmm. And on a Monday, it was, you know, your higher heart rate kind of stuff, the 50s at best average or maximum effort, The Wednesdays were kind of like my skills session, so really getting a lot of kick and parachute works, or like, you know, power kind of stuff. Right. And then the Friday, because I tended to be a little bit more fatigued, or not, depending on, again, where my shift cycle was, it was the skills-based thing. So a lot of dive work and those max 25s. So in general, you know, Mondays are relatively tough endurance sprint set. Wednesdays, more the like body position power with the parachutes, paddles, and that kind of thing. And then Friday was skill work. So diving was definitely something I had to work on. I'm not very fast off the blocks. And so that was a big focus. And then dispersed within that, I had quite a big strength block. So I did a lot of heavy weights for probably the first couple of months. Before then, that refined into more of a moderate weights, a plyo, and then whatever was, you know, kind of left for those last two gym sessions. It was the most controlled, sporadic training, if that makes any sense. So like I had a plan, but that was one of the biggest learnings that, you know, a lot older, I'm 31 now, I was having to adapt around lifestyle. And like, I also, part of this whole experiment was, what can I do with my given lifestyle? So I didn't actually compromise a lot on social events and things. Like I still wanted to see friends, go out for dinners. And so that's something I took a little bit of pride in, is not only, you know, have I swum like this, I've also, you know, I we actually, when I did my first lifetime best in November, we moved into my first home that weekend. So the preparation before that, I think I was up until like midnight. And then the next day, went to the heats. The moment I walked through the doors to the pool, it was like game on. Like, get your warm up, your movements ready, get the head right. Swam well, came back, moved boxes for like 4 hours, you know, like up and down stairs. And I forgot to eat lunch until 3 o'clock, turned up to the pool for the final again. Through the doors, it's just game on. And it was, I wasn't like thinking about swimming at all during that day, and then swam, I think it was like a 25.6, which at the time was like my best ever. And that was this big shock, being like, how have I just had a really late night, moved boxes, and then swum better than I did in 2016 when I had my naps, I had 8 hours of sleep, and, you know, it was quite surprising.
Yeah.
Tired of settling for less than the best with your team's dryland program? Swimstrong Dryland is the answer you've been looking for. With world-class dryland programming for every age group, customized to fit your team's needs, nutritional coaching and education centered on the latest evidence-based research, leadership training and character development to promote an athlete-driven culture, sports psychology education and mental skills training, coaches' corners to promote collaboration, data-driven performance analysis, and an unrivaled family of athletes, coaches, and teams, fast swimming starts here.
Former swimmers, looking for a way to give back to the sport in New York City? Reach out to Imagine Swimming. Since 2002, they've been the premier learn-to-swim school with international and American staff, including Olympic champions Anthony Irvin and Eric Vint. Imagine Swimming offers infant to adult classes, plus competitive team options, water polo, and an artistic swimming club coached by an Olympic silver medalist. With flagship locations across Manhattan and Brooklyn, Imagine is always looking for the next generation of swimmers to pass on their knowledge and passion for swimming. Yeah, yeah, it is surprising in a way, but not, you know, for me, for someone that's gone through it, it's not. For people looking on the outside in, we're like, how do you do that? How do you do that? But there's a couple of things there that I think attribute to it. And one of them being that, you know, there's the exactness of this, right? Like you're going in and doing exactly what you need, and allowing yourself to be, you know, hurt in a way that you're breaking the body down, but then allowing it to recover physically and mentally. So it's not just like, okay, I'm mentally good to go again, but physically I'm busted up. It's like you're allowing yourself to be at a pretty good capacity. I'm not going to say you were ever 100% recovered, but you got to the point where you're like, okay, I'm ready to go back and work again. And so I think that when you have that freedom to kind of allow the body to relax and recover, and also have a freshness of the mind, and you do that over a long period of time, you have a situation like this where, yeah, you're moving boxes all day and it is kind of fatiguing, but you have that ability to turn the mind on and go. And that's, I think, the difference between doing it the other way is you're just beat down all the time, beat down, beat down. And then all of a sudden you have this massive rest. And off that massive rest, you start to have all these doubts and fears and anxieties, whereas you're just kind of in it all the time that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that mindset has been definitely the biggest change. Like I think I said on that Instagram post, right? Like when I was younger, I was bound by this like harsh binary thinking. So if I had a bad session, that in my mind meant that I was going to swim poorly at an event, like to the point where I know it's completely insane, but I'd have a piece of chocolate and assume that I would be fat. Like, logically, I'd understand that that kind of thinking was absurd, but emotionally, it was really hard to disassociate from those feelings. Whereas when I'm a bit older and, like, I suppose not responding so emotionally to things that don't go the right way, like, you know, at trials, it wasn't super smooth. I slept horribly the night before and had like a pain in my right bicep. And I was like, there's nothing I can really do about it. If I keep thinking about it, it's kind of pointless. But when I was younger, I found it really hard to get away from those thoughts. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. I just had a conversation yesterday with a guy who was racing. And this is kind of the same conversation I was having with him. Is like, look, you don't understand this right now because you're only 17 and you're young. You think all of this matters greatly. Like his personality was changing. He was getting angry and anxious and you know, he was trying to rush to the event. I said, listen, the event's coming. It's coming tomorrow. Like, just calm down, you know? So it's like, sometimes it does take that experience, doesn't it? That you need to go through a little bit of that to learn. So I can't always say that, you know, what you did in the past is wrong, because it has had some positive effect on you now where you've learned from this as well and grown from that, haven't you?
Oh, absolutely. And I think one of the best books that I think I've ever read was Carol Dweck's one authored, and it was called Mindset. And that was actually recommended to me by Lauren Boyle. And it really blew me away. Like, I had thought that I had this personality where I thought, you know, I had a growth mindset. I thought anything could be possible through effort and things. But as I was reading through this book, I realized I had a lot of what she calls fixed mindset patterns, where you believe that something can't be changed and you just deal with it. Whereas through persistence or education, all these different things, you can actually change the situation or the outcomes of certain things. So I think that book was a very valuable tool, I suppose, in the journey as well.
Now, you've got some questions to answer here for yourself, I guess. It's like you're now 31 and you're swimming faster than you've ever swum. Do you continue along the same pattern and do exactly the type of work you've been doing in exactly the same way, or in order to try and find gains, or do you change something? Have you started to think about that at all?
Yeah, so I think the way that it's going is good, because I don't think I'm ready to change anything, because when I'm doing my sessions, I still feel like there's more. You know, like if I got to a session and felt like I'd got through it and there was nothing left to take from that style of training, it's time to move on. I think my body, to put it simply, my body's still adapting to the way that I'm training. I think while it's adapting, that it's going to elicit a positive change. So I'll get better results because I'm still learning. It would be interesting if I was training like this for a couple of years and then stagnated, like what would be next?
Yeah.
But I'll test it again. I kind of had a week or so to chill, and I've got my next event in June at the New Zealand Masters and got a couple of goals there. But do you know what has been quite funny is now that I am, you know, a bit older, it's also that restriction on autonomy. So like I'll wake up sometimes and all I want to do is go for a run or get on my bike. But if you're training for 53, it's not going to help you with that outcome. So one thing I did notice when I was a bit older was I was missing doing what I wanted to do. So that has funnily been a bit of a challenge. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the reason why I'm not going back to swimming. So I have to cut out everything I want to do. Like, people are like, oh, Brad, you should try swimming. No, I'm cool. I'm good.
Well, funny you say that, because I actually am trying a different style of swimming. So I'm going to do the ice swimming nationals in July.
Oh, Jesus.
And I hate the colors.
Oh,
yeah. Oh. And that was literally, people are like, why? Because, you know, people know that I absolutely detest the cold. And it's for me, it's like a both a psychological but a physiological challenge because, you know, from the, like, body perspective, an amazing amount of things happen on cold water exposure. Like, you know, that's involuntary as well. So I think for me, it's also going to be quite interesting if I swim a 50 from a push with no tumble turn, which you have to do with ice swimming, in the pool at 27 degrees versus at ice nationals. I also want to see the difference in speed. Like, if I can push a 25 or a 26, what am I going to do in the 5 degree water? Just out of interest.
The out of interest to me is like, you know, being punched in the face. I'd much rather get punched in the face and see what that feels like than dive into 5 degree water.
That's what it feels like when you put your face in. It actually does feel like being punched in the face.
Yeah, exactly. That sounds horrible to me. I hate the cold too. I'm the same as you. I absolutely loathe the cold. Like, I won't even get into I live in California and there's a pool out here, and I won't get in the pool unless it's 75 degrees outside. So that's how bad I am. Brilliant.
Yeah, and I've heard about all these different, you know, positives about cold water exposure. And for the first time yesterday after my, like, ice bath training session, I felt that, like, you know, I suppose high or that endorphin rush you get. And honestly, because I was doing like push-ups and star jumps in between to get warm, and I weirdly felt like really strong as well, and I had this manic looking smile, and I was like, I think it's just from the cold. But yeah.
Right, yeah. Do you look at other girls internationally, let's say, and do you compare your body type to them and say, well, that person swims like me, they kind of built like me, you know, maybe they're faster than me, I want to swim similar to them? Is there anybody on the world stage that you look at and that you analyze?
Oh, 100%. Like, that was, I've watched a lot of swimming over the last like 7 or 8 months. Campbell were focused a lot on, simply because in stature she's relatively similar height ish you know, body type.
Yep.
But, you know, I've looked at a whole range of them. I've watched Emma McKeon, I've watched Kate, Sarah Sostrom, obviously, a lot. And then also, I'm going to forget her name now. Yeah, and there was one other I was watching a lot. And I've found social media to be the most incredible tool, because they're actually posting. And a lot of the males too, you know, I was watching Cam's dives. I was watching a lot of the performance under the water, which I think I didn't pay attention to at all as a younger athlete. And it's not necessarily that I want to emulate the way that someone else swims. I just want to have a mental library of understanding of different techniques, so that when I am swimming, I can kind of imagine moving my body in a way that they do, and, you know, troubleshoot it myself. Does this feel better? Is this faster if I, you know, move in a way that they do? Because, yeah, there is a big range out there. And I think, we move through such a unique environment as swimmers that you need to be able to have such an understanding of your body and the way that water moves. And my friend, actually, I can't claim that I thought about this, but she said, they talk about angles, you know, you want a X amount of flexion at your elbow for the prep, but water doesn't actually move in angles, right? Like, there's not a 90 degree movement, it's all curves. So if you're trying to think mechanistically about the way that you move, it's probably good logically to understand that, but at the end of the day, water's fluid and it bends and it doesn't have sharp angles. So also being inside the body and the way that it moves and understanding the way that others move, I think, has been quite useful.
Really smart. Yeah, I love the way you articulate it. It's really, really clever. You've put a lot of time and energy into this, I can tell, and really elite with your thinking. You know, the fact that you've swimming best times and you're 25 low and the 50 is great. I hope you get to 23 high, and then we can be like, oh, okay, yeah, she really gets all this now. She just put it together, and she's like this superhuman. So I want you to start swimming 23s. What are your favorite freestyle drills? What do you do for drills?
The penguin kick's definitely up there. You know, the hands by the side. I think
you wear a snorkel with that?
Yeah, mostly. I didn't used to, but now that I don't breathe in the breathe once in the 50, I don't. So yeah, snorkel. Other drills, the speed drills, I really enjoyed that. You know, the kick to sprint, so both arms up, kicking as hard as you can into the stroke and really trying to maintain the kick cadence and the connection with the arms. Yep. That was really useful. And polo drill, which I hate, but was quite good for me because I needed to up my stroke cadence. So probably those three were like a staple. And then in terms of, yeah, that equipment, getting used to using the parachute, I really don't enjoy it. I hate that feeling of being like dragged back, but I think that was a really useful tool.
Other than the parachute, do you use any other resistance tool? Do you use a resistance cord, or do you use buckets or towels or anything?
I got to use the towels a couple of times. There's with the club that I did join, a couple of sessions up there, and then also one with an amazing coach down in the Hawke's Bay. And I think I enjoyed the towers more. It felt a little bit more natural in the water for some reason. I wonder if it's the angle to the weight, whereas the, I suppose the parachute draws you down versus up. But I think that's something I would have liked to have used a lot more.
Yeah, I love the towers. I think they're exceptional.
Yeah,
love them. Absolutely. Expensive and hard to maneuver, but if you have them on the deck, man, they're so good. Yeah, very cool. I'll send you a pack. I'll send you some stuff. I got some stuff. I'll send you a little gift pack, all right?
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Won't be a tower, but I'll send you some other stuff. I'll get you going a little bit. All right, cool. So, and then in terms of feel for the water, do you do sculling and feel for the water drills?
Yeah, oh, I completely forgot about that. Yeah, so I used to be the classic like front sculler, you know, just in and out, feeling for the pressure of the water. But I've since moved that to that, doggy skull? I think I saw it on one of your Instagrams. Yeah, and I found that a lot more useful than my classic like out skull because I could focus more on keeping. I like the cue of the shoulder near the jaw because I think if you can elevate that shoulder, it allows you to get into that like catch position earlier. So with that doggy skull, I could focus on keeping the shoulders up near the jaw and getting into that quick flexion. And there's not much better feeling, hey, than doing like, I used to love doing 50s long course, halfway skull, halfway swim. And when you go from that sculling into the swimming and you can just feel the pressure under those palms, it's definitely one of my favorite drill swim combos.
Yeah. Now, what about yourself? You say you watch other people's Instagrams and even mine for stuff like this. Do you put your own stuff out as well? Do you record yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I do as much as I – that's the whole reason I started the Instagram is I think about swimming a lot and I was like, oh, this could probably be useful and started posting a little bit and had some nice feedback. So as much as I can, I do post videos of different drills and cool. swimming. Yeah.
Where can we find you? Tell people that they're listening right now. Where can they find you?
Instagram on it's Aura Move NZ, and that's everyone's like, oh, did you just forget the L because it's like Laura, but it's minus the L. But it's named Aura because I think that's the sense that you get from the pool or the activity. So you get a great aura from swimming. So it's not cool. My name missing the L. It's about the experience and the feeling you get from swimming.
Yeah, I love it. What about nutritionally? Did you have to make adjustments there? I think you said before you were actually pretty strict on yourself. Now it seems like you have the same strictness, but some looseness within it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would not be alone. I am quite open with the fact that I've struggled a bit with, disordered styles of eating. Like back 8 years ago, I really was... restricted eating patterns because I thought that 68 kgs equated to success in the pool. And I do think that weight, like I think weight is an important part of the athletic profile because if you look at, physics or science, right, if you're dragging a bigger mass through the water, it is more challenging. But if you don't have the power to drag a light body, then it's pointless. So I will preface this by saying I think weight is important, but it's not the only metric that needs to be assessed. And when I was a bit younger, I was obsessed with the weight to the point where I would come home from training sometimes, I would have like 3 Weet-Bix, and if I'd done over 5K, I'd have 4. You know, that was the way that I was thinking. And I would tie my success a lot to my capacity to control what I was eating. And at the time, I thought that was a really good thing. I thought the control that I had over how much I was eating and what I chose to eat was a sign of being an elite athlete. And looking back, it was it was way too restrictive. Like, I would literally go to sleep and nap until the next meal if I was still hungry. I think about it now and I'm like, why did I not just fuel properly? And I think, you know, say if I was going to swim better at 68 kgs, at least having someone to support me on that journey to be like, let's just make sure that you're getting enough of the right kind of stuff to get you to that weight.
Right.
You know, because I did. I raced at 68 and today I'm 75, but I'm swimming faster than I was back then.
Wow.
So I think, and what I compare it to, right, is like, I remember writing this blog years ago about like mental whiplash, where on a Monday I'd do like this bench press PB and I'd swim like a PB in training and you'd feel awesome. And then it might be the off season, you go out to a party on Saturday night and you're looking at the size of your shoulders and your arms next to these other girls and you feel like a monster. And it's kind of like within 1 week going from this pride in how strong your body looks to like, maybe I need to be even thinner. So it was this constant kind of battle. And that's something that with age and a bit of support, it's got a lot better. Yeah. So
I'm really glad you mentioned that because I was over in Israel a couple of weeks ago and I met this young, I think she was about 16 and she was tall, just like you, tall, thin, big shoulders. And this was one of the issues that she was having. I said to her, I was like, look, you're technically, she was really good in the water. I said, you've just got to get stronger. She's like, Brett, my shoulders are too big. I look like a giant compared to my friends and I feel bad when I go out. She's like, I can't get bigger. I don't want to get bigger. I was like, no, I said, you have to get stronger. I didn't say you have to get bigger, but I don't think you're big anyway. But I was like, I'm not saying that at all. But in her mind, she felt just obnoxiously big to be this swimmer. And it's like, she tried to avoid any type of strength at all so that she wouldn't look any bigger or stronger, you know?
Yeah. And that's something that I think is quite common. And like, it's one thing because I now am much more comfortable and I think that strength is beautiful because you can only have a bigger muscle or a more toned physique through hard work, you know? But that's something that needs to be like really well supported, you know, and like to be open about if you are struggling. So what I think the biggest issue for me, not necessarily was the restriction, but it was the constant mental obsession. So like, you know, I'd wake up and be thinking about food before going out to dinner with friends. I'd be like, you know, like it was too consuming. And I think that's one thing that, yeah, it should be more liberating. Like food is a source of fuel. It should be something to enjoy. But I think, I suppose finding a way to assess your physical form is like how fast you're swimming, how strong you're in the gym, as well as other metrics. Yeah.
Mm. You know, you're starting to sound like an elite coach in and out of the pool. You've got the understanding of how to build speed and strength in the pool and then this awareness that you've got out of the pool. You could be an incredible mentor to women, but you've got a good job already, so I'm not going to pull you onto the pool deck. But, yeah.
No, I love coaching. If I could nurse and coach at the same time, that's kind of, you know, the A game. That's like goals.
Yeah, well, it seems like you'd be a great resource for the young girls in New Zealand. You know, like you've gone through this process, you've figured so many things out, you've got so much experience, you've got this elite, acute awareness of speed and strength and all this other stuff. To me, you'd be somebody that I'd want to try and pull in, especially with the lack of women at that level. You know, in swimming, I think New Zealand swimming could certainly pull you in and try and use you a little bit more. That'd be pretty cool, you know?
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it. That's awesome.
Yeah.
My head's just swelling.
No, it's been a fascinating conversation. You know, like you articulate things so well. And like I said, you put it together. Maybe because you've got this real sensitive feel for it right now because you're in it, you know, like you're living it and you're every day. I say this to people all the time, is like when I was an athlete, I retired at 31. When I was at that level, the way that I transitioned so quickly into coaching is that I just had this sensitivity to it. Like I could just tell the guys, like, this is exactly what you need to do and how you need to do it. And it just kind of clicked because I was in it. And it seems like that's where you're at right now. You have this real sensitivity to exactly what you need to do.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think that Yeah. And still thinking about it and learning. I think that has been one of the most incredible experiences is, you know, I think the amount that I've learned and changed my own approach and kind of thought about, you know, I used to think that everyone had to swim long and strong and take, I don't know, 12 strokes for a 25. I'm just thinking, wow, that is definitely not the case.
Yeah. Well, this is why I started the Sprint Revolution. You know, this is the whole depth and understanding of what I'm trying to get across here. And I love this conversation. And I hope a lot of people watch this and really start to dig in and explore, ask the same type of questions you're asking, because I think there is an element of the way that we used to swim and train and think that is just embedded into the way that we still do things. You know, it's like that's not going to disappear, but I think there's this new way of thinking, this new age, and this new dimension of speed and strength and power, and we're exploring it, you know. And I think it's so complex. It's not about doing less. So many people get it wrong where they just think I'm just going to do less, and I'm going to, you know, it's like there's so much complexity to it, and it seems like you're really digging into the complexity.
Yeah, it's about doing it different, not doing it less.
Yeah. Yeah, it's still hard as hell, right?
Yeah.
You still have to sacrifice as much. You still have to work as hard. You still think as much about it. You still hurt as much, or maybe even more. So it's like none of that changes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you're so cool. Right.
Well, listen, so when's the next, what's the next aim you said?
So next one is the Masters Nationals in June, and then it's the Ice Nationals in July.
The Ice Nationals. We'll see. Are you going to do any ice prep work for that?
Yeah, so it's already started. I obviously live in Auckland, so it's not going to get cold enough to do the swimming in the less than five. So I've been trialing with, you know, ice bath and trying to control the breathing, because you get a gasp reflex. So face first into that ice bath. And then, yeah, whether I do a training camp in Taupo or something like that. But
There's not a lot of people out in the world doing their Instagram face first into the ice bath, is there? Yeah, I was just saying
even sitting in it, right? Like the collarbone pain.
I don't see all these heroes that are doing the ice baths, putting their face in there. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I appreciate this chat. Nice to have it with you. Okay. Thanks, Laura.
Yeah, really appreciate it.
Yeah. Good luck with everything. Okay.
Cheers.
Cheers. Bye.